Be careful what you wish for. Ever get that feeling that something might be hanging around?
Good day, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Paranormal Encounters podcast series. The producer and host of this series is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. She will be joining you shortly. Before we meet Dr. Schutz, let me give you some background about her. She is a published author and academic, former legal investigator, and paranormal enthusiast, who holds 4 advanced degrees in the area of higher education and applied communications, with a secondary interest in parapsychology and life-after-death issues. Dr. Schutz travels to haunted locations all over the United States and Europe, seeking out situations to investigate. A sensitive intuitive, Dr. Schutz has had numerous experiences with the paranormal since the age of 9, with her most frightening and recent experience being an oval-shaped floor-length mirror cycling around in front of her in a haunted room she had stayed in. She has photographed apparitions in a screened window, been kicked up into the air, been sat on, choked, put into a trance, attacked, and continuously sought out by the unknown who want to share a message with her. From her personal experiences and in interviewing others, she has written nearly 100 illustrated stories in her book series entitled Paranormal Encounters. The Paranormal Encounters podcast series will initiate with Dr. Schutz first discussing a variety of interesting topics, as well as her personal experiences that will evolve into other segments for your interest, enjoyment, and education. Each podcast episode will be approximately 45 minutes long. Dr. Schutz welcomes your questions and comments. How to contact her, or ways to order her books, will be mentioned at the end of this podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Paranormal Encounters podcast series as published by Paranormal Universal Press, LLC. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz, your producer and host of this show. And before I forget, let me remind you that subscribing to this program is absolutely free, giving you the opportunity to be notified of my future episodes as I upload them. Don't forget to play, download, and of course, like the show. A few weeks ago, I had my first book signing for the year. It appears my most popular book is, drumroll please, Hanging Around. This book has my most intriguing and scary experiences in it. More on where to find my books in just a moment. When I'm at my book signings, I always enjoy speaking to new faces and hearing about paranormal stories. And boy, howdy, are there some incidents going on out there that I have not even experienced yet. And, of course, I need to also mention, I hope I never experience yet. I will share some of their stories with you as the program moves along. Before we get into our main topic, let me remind all of you that my 7-book series can be found on Amazon, Kindle, and Barnes & Noble. True stories about 100 different situations I have been in and have experienced for the past 40-some years. On Amazon, just type in Paranormal Encounters into the search bar and look on my first few pages. The books contain true stories of what I have encountered with beautifully illustrated pictures and sketches. And if you would like to view my book covers and their descriptions, go to my website first at www.paranormaluniversalpress.com. That's www.paranormaluniversalpress.com. So, let's get started. Here is what is on the agenda for this episode. In segment 1, Paranormal Topics, the topic for this week will be Ghosts' Favorite Hiding Places. Segment 2, Beyond the Grave, a voice talent, will share a story about an elderly grandmother who continued to dress herself even after she had passed away. Segment 3, Ghosts in the News. A voice talent will report an interesting news story about an unexplained ghostly encounter from somewhere around the world. Segment 4, a very popular segment called Maynard and Mildred. This comedic show will enlighten your day by putting a smile on your face as Maynard continues to be picked on by Mildred, his ghost friend. And segment 5, a new segment called Life Beyond Death, as narrated by a voice talent who will share a story about a parent who moved her family into a haunted house that had no idea how dangerous the environment would be to her children. For episode 19, I think it's time to take a little journey out west to delve into the ghosts of Las Vegas with some of my most intriguing stories, most of them happening to myself. That'll be next time, of course. Stay tuned. If you have a story you would like to share, please write to my email at krschutz1@yahoo.com. That's krschutz1@yahoo.com. Before we get started on the first segment, let's have a word from this podcast series sponsor.
Donate. Simply click the button that says Donate on the podcast page located on the right-hand side to contribute to this program. We appreciate your willingness to pay it forward.
This segment is called Paranormal Topics. The topic for discussion will be Ghosts' Favorite Hiding Places. This is the educational portion of the podcast. Before I begin discussing this topic, let me give you a mini crash course and remind you that when we die, our energy is released from our bodies but doesn't necessarily die along with us. It goes somewhere. Most of us who are intrigued by the paranormal continue our mission in figuring out, though, where? Where does our energy go after we die? Some of the most popular places energies tend to go, if the entity decides to stick around, is usually to a place of comfort. Let me give you a very simplistic example. My great aunt, who was around 10 years old when she had passed away, she had passed away in a home that my great-grandfather built about 1 to 2 miles down the road in what I would say was their first home. And she actually followed this family to each of their homes, but ended up in the final home, which, by the way, I had photographed her image looking through a screened window along with a gentleman who was looking above her shoulder. A very, very clear image of both of these entities. At first I wasn't quite sure who the little girl was, but because she looked so much like our family, I basically did process of elimination here, since it was a built home by my great-grandfather, that it was actually her, but she had died in a house 2 miles away. So is it possible for energies to go from one place to another? Yes, actually it is. It just depends on what's happening in the conditions. Another entity that decided to take up residence in my great-grandparents' barn was that of a young man who was explained to me by a very, very good ghost psychic. That he was a young man who served in the military, probably the army, back in the day, who actually was hanging out in the hayloft of the barn and just kind of hung there smoking cigarettes. Now, I know that there was somebody in there at some point. There was at least a few people in there. I have ghost hunted in that barn a few times and captured, heard, and experienced some very interesting things going on in there. Now, I can never prove that it was a guy from the military, okay? But I can definitely say that I did capture something in there, and I can also say that this ghost psychic is very, very good when she picks up these energies of unknown individuals that are captured. So that's just one illustration of a place of comfort. Usually also, though, these entities are seeking a dimly lit location, such as a closet, a basement, an attic, of course a barn or shed that's not really trafficked a lot, or an upper or lower corner of a room. No one seems to know why, but it appears these places provide an environment that's very attractive to the apparition. So do not avoid ghost hunting in these places when you're on your discovery missions. The question then moves to, why a dimly lit area? That answer would probably need to be tagged with, why are we most successful in our ghost hunting efforts during the evening hours versus daylight hours? After all, we know that ghosts can hang around during the daylight and even during the evening hours. For the next episode, which will be episode 19, I am going to be discussing the ghosts of Las Vegas. And I have had several incidences occur to me, around me, by me, near me, at me, while in Las Vegas. It seems to be a breeding ground for ghosts. And about a year ago, I had captured, actually outside, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, bright sky, perfect conditions, and it was actually on a full moon evening day, a very large mist outside of this haunted museum that Zach Bagans, the host, and I'm not sure if he's the owner, but the host and creator of the television show Ghost Adventures, my husband and I had found this building that he is storing a lot of his haunted objects in, and as we speak, I think he's either opened it or is about ready to open this haunted place. Of course, I was outside the fence at the time, and I was shooting through the fence with my camera and captured on the side of his building an extremely large mist, which, by the way, is nearly unheard of during daylight hours unless you're in the right conditions. And it was on the side of the building, so there was a little bit of some there was shadowing that went on to allow me to pick up this mist. Now, I never saw it at first, and you might say, oh, maybe they were doing something and it was a vent and all this. You can do the vent theory all you want to, but there was no vent on that side of the house. In fact, I never saw it with my visible eyes, but somehow my camera picked up on it as I snapped the picture. So, is it possible to capture apparitions during the daylight hours? Apparently the answer is yes, and it's well known that that place is very haunted. Let's go into some other theories here, shall we? Let's see. One theory suggests bright conditions or sunlight hours can hurt or give what we call a sunburn to a ghostly energy. Now, let me remind you that when I captured that incredibly huge mist outside of that house, museum, whatever you want to refer to it as, it was in a shadowed area, which allowed for it to be more visible, I guess, to my camera. Another theory is that the ionosphere, which has a direct connection to solar and cosmic radiation, can affect the strength of the UV rays, that's ultraviolet rays, from the atmosphere, making it more difficult for manifestations to occur in bright conditions. Now, that was that. I'm going back to Zach Bagans' museum here again. That was an interesting experience for me, because the whole day was basically lined up perfectly for a lot of hauntings that day. Didn't just stop there. I went on a ghostly tour that evening and had the most remarkable experiences on that tour. Part of it probably due to the fact that it was a really strong, very strong full moon evening here. Another theory is that some ghosts simply like quiet conditions. And of course, another theory is that our eyes have a more difficult time seeing apparitions during daylight hours than evening hours, especially if we are using equipment that aids in our discoveries, such as an SLS camera, which has usually an ultraviolet lens on it, by the way, LED lights, etc. We also know that stronger energies have a tendency to feed off of certain elements to allow for their manifestation, such as turbulent weather, especially during lightning strikes and storms, rushing water, certain types of stone, copper wiring, electricity, full and new moons, and a person's negative or highly charged emotions. Yes, you heard me right. A person's emotions can actually be a battery for a ghostly apparition. So why do you think in some households when you hear they fight and argue all the time? I'm not going to say that there's a ghost in their house provoking them to do this. I'm just saying that a ghost really likes negative and highly charged emotions because that acts as a battery to feed off of them. All of these types of elements act as a battery, and of course, as being the battery, charges the energy of the apparition that you may or may not see during daylight hours, or especially possibly having an experience during evening hours. We know that if a ghost manifests, that their ability to hold their energy, by the way, is for 3 to 5 seconds, and then their image fades away, especially if you see this image. Now let me go back to the image that I photographed in the window, screened window of my great-grandfather's house where the little girl showed up. I have absolutely no idea how long they were up there watching me, but they looked directly at the camera. They were staring right at me. They had expressions on their faces, and I would suppose that if they were able to hold their image, since a lightning strike had hit the property the day before, and you know when you can hear that electrical sound in the air, it's kind of a buzzing sound. That whole farm was literally lit up from a terrible storm that had gone through. So, and the light in the foundation of the property had a limestone foundation. So you've got different elements here that actually helped to charge the property to help them manifest to begin with. Did I have any idea that something was staring out a window at me? Well, first I wasn't looking. I was just taking pictures from the outside of their home. But secondly, after I go back and I look at these images now, I can definitely tell you that everything was perfectly right for them to manifest. I would bet, though, they didn't hold their image more than 3 to 5 seconds. And then they've probably faded away. So, some ask the question to me, if an apparition is residual, which means it's a playback, something that's not intelligent, something that just kind of looks, for example, let's say they're looking out the window and then they faded away, but they do this every April, on April around the 7th or something like that. Could that make a difference in what we see here going on? Well, that's a good question. After all, if it's a playback and it isn't intelligent, then would that make any difference in the amount of energy that's needed or absorbed in order to manifest? And I need to research that question just a little bit more. I'm not really sure, because if an entity isn't intelligent to begin with and they manifest and they allow you to see it, then why is it that the strength of it only holds for 3 to 5 seconds? That's something you need to think about here. We also know that there are portals. Portals is a way of transportation. It's how apparitions, energies come into the world and leave the world. Some and how they travel. Some travel under the earth in the crevices and the environment. Some actually come through doors in certain areas in our homes that aren't explained very well. We know that ley lines, a ley line is like an electrical line that kind of goes through a lot of our homes and on our properties that we cannot see. And there's a big discussion about the energy charges of ley lines. So if you're on a location that potentially has an electrical ley line going through it, which you cannot see, it is possible that you might have more of an opportunity to have a haunting on that property since it's a continuous battery for an apparition. Some of these portals, again, are doors and windows or underneath our foundations. I can tell you, and also if there's an Indian burial ground underneath your home, there is also the possibility that you might have conditions that could be more heavily charged than others. There is also debate that we ourselves can also create our paranormal events around us, where we emit from our own bodies energies from us, causing things in our environment to move or trigger something. And this is what is called telekinesis. However, I'm a little skeptical about this theory and my ability to move things, though I have seen movement occur when I look directly at certain objects. However, the one thing that still is a little confusing is this. My husband and I went away on a trip once, and it just so happens we live across from a haunted, what used to be a haunted property. They took the house down, and these ghost children from across the way that like to play in our house once in a while. When we left, I had set out some decoys for them on our bed. Well, interestingly enough, they always like to play with our clocks, or at least a couple of these certain clocks that have captured my attention. And so if it's telekinesis and I'm doing this myself, then can someone explain to me how when we arrived home after being gone for 10 days and everything was in perfect condition, that again, once again, the same objects, my clocks, have a tendency to have the dials moved on them, which, by the way, isn't a dead battery or anything like that. It's their way of telling me that they had been there. And I had left these decoys out on our bed, and they didn't play with the decoys, but they played with the clock. Although, again, the clock had a battery, and it's possible that there's some connection to that. I don't know. But anyway, I wanted to bring that up because there seems to be this debate that we're bringing all this stuff on ourselves, but we're blaming it on a ghost in our environment. In some cases, that might be true. In others, I'm not quite so sure about. Let me go into here on triggering. Is it possible for our energy then to be misdirected, creating havoc in our homes? It's possible. I'm not going to rule it out. But again, how does that explain apparitions coming out of a closet as we're sleeping or being awakened by something coming out of the closet? You cannot tell me that that is being done purposefully from somebody. Now, theories have it that young girls who are menstruating, older women who are going through menopause, or individuals who have negative or highly charged emotions can excite a change in their environment, acting as a battery for either paranormal experiences or disruptions created by themselves. Again, how do you explain this? I'm not exactly sure. Let's go back to looking at the most common area, though, we hear about. Why do ghosts like to hang out in our closets? Although there seems to be countless theories and reports of apparitions hanging out in closets, has anyone really taken the time to investigate a closet? I mean, once you watch these television shows, do you ever see them really running around and wanting to stand in a closet and investigate it? Usually we're running around in hallways, rooms, basements, attics, and of course, rarely in a closet, looking for an apparition. However, have you ever wondered that if you knew that an apparition was hanging out in your closet, what exactly would you do? Would you ask it, just be quiet in there, please? Or, you know, would it creep you out more? Would you not go into your closet? Children, who are the most sensitive detector of apparitions, often report seeing and hearing something come out of their closets. Some report dark figures, while others see varying human or creature-like images. Adults, we often dismiss their claims as being their imagination. Adults, though, have reported seeing shadows and ghostly images of their relatives, either sitting on the end of the bed or coming out of the closet or standing there, and are absolutely terrified, but then they blame it on the alcohol that they drank before they lay down and went to bed. So, again, how do we ever know? Ever wonder why so many of us sleep with the nightlight on? I know that sounds a little crazy, but I think about my nieces and my nephews, and I even think about myself growing up. It seems like there is a great desire to have some type of a light in the room. I don't know why that provides so much comfort, since if it's a ghostly shadow that walks through it, that would probably terrify me even more. However, have you ever noticed that a lot of people do seem to have night lights on in their homes? And I know you're going to say they have them on in their home so they don't trip over something if they have to use the restroom during the middle of the night. That's very true. But on the other hand, have you ever asked them, is there another reason? Probably not. When I was a young child, probably around the age of 7 or 8, I remember having a sleepover at my grandparents' house, not knowing there was an active yet negative ghostly being who resided upstairs somewhere. I recall my grandmother shutting my bedroom door but leaving the hallway light on. I remember looking under, you know how you look under the crack of a door and when there's light glowing underneath it? And I actually saw the images of what it looked like 2 feet standing right there at the door. And I had thought it was my grandmother trying to listen in or see if she hears something. And I had called out to her at one point asking if she would come in for a moment for a question, and nothing ever moved. It just kind of stood there. I think there's nothing more creepy to an individual than looking at the glow of shadows or shadow feet, you know, under that crack of a person's door. And yet there was never, she wasn't up there. And so I had this really sick feeling. So I just turned over and I just kind of put the covers over my head. And when you're in an environment that's a little bit more unknown to you and not familiar, you have a tendency to spook yourself out a little bit. But in this particular case, my answer came, probably about 30 to 35 years later, when I really began seriously having a lot of experiences, but I decided to go into their house just to look at some of their things, because they both had passed away, and had an encounter at this time upstairs, especially in that room that I was in. More on that in just a second, okay? So, what I thought was probably my own imagination actually turned out to be, years later, a negative apparition who it could have been. And where did this apparition reside or come from? There was a closet upstairs, up on that level, that was rarely gone into. And when that door opened, it was the creepiest experience to actually, I didn't even want to look in it. I was so creeped out by it. And my grandmother would go into that closet. It was right upstairs, directly right ahead of the stairs. And she just kept Christmas things in there and junk, you know, stuff. And she would go in and she would turn on that light and she'd go, see, there's nothing in here. And she would go and get what she needed to go in there. Because she'd always say, here, come on in with me. And I'd say, no, I don't want to come in that closet with you. I'm too creeped out by it. It was narrow, you know, it was very compressed. And perfect conditions for something to hang out in it. But, you know, did I ever see anything come out of that closet? No. but I felt very creeped out by that closet, and I also felt creeped out, by the way, by something I'm going to talk about in a little bit, a wardrobe. And we're going to talk about that in just a little bit, too. So here's my heart pounding. You know, I don't like being upstairs in her house. I don't like that little closet room. I don't like anything up there. I'm all creeped out. And I don't like two things. I don't like her wardrobe in one room, and I don't like that little closet, which was right after, as you came up the stairs. Years later, I would discover that a woman had actually burned to death in that house. There was a fire just outside of the kitchen, and this is where she perished. But unfortunately, she didn't want to probably go yet, and she hung around for many years and took residence in that house. That was her house, by golly, and she wasn't going to leave it for nothing, and she had a terrible, tragic death. And so things started to make more sense to me as I started looking into some of the occurrences in that house. So, have I ever lived anywhere else knowing that a ghost was hiding in one of my closets? Well, the answer is, yes, I have. And I figured it out after a wall plaque. You know how when you watch television and sometimes you see some of these cartoons and they're showing this haunted house and they show the stairways and the pictures are all at a slant. They're not up and down. They're slanted on the wall. Well, this is exactly what a plaque in my master bathroom in a former house looked like one time when I discovered it. And I knew that there was something in our house, but it went, as the energy grew more stronger, all of a sudden I could tell that things were being moved, tampered with, you know, hanging at a slant, you know, very interesting things were happening in there. And so over time, in experiencing these oddities in that house, we suspected we were not alone. At first, I suspected that I thought maybe I brought something back with us from one of our trips, since I did nothing but go and stay in haunted locations. Another time, I thought maybe I was it was the antique globe that I was gifted from my grandparents, that house that I was telling you about a minute ago, and that maybe something attached itself to it as I took them out of there, because after all, they were very original and very antique to that house. And so I thought maybe I brought it into my house. What I did is I took one of the globes that survived, and I actually had a light placed on the ceiling, and so I could put the globe over it because I loved the Victorian pattern on it. And when I think back now, I often wonder if maybe something attached itself to it from that house, and I brought it into my house with me. So here I'm suspecting things over time. Are things attaching themselves to me? Are they attaching themselves to objects? What on earth? You know, and of course, we go right back again to the closet. So another thing that most people don't realize is that water sources can act as, I'm not going to say a battery, that's probably not right, but or a portal of possibly bringing apparitions into a house. And so, of course, every home has a water source, right? No matter where it's at. And some homes are not haunted at all. So there's other conditions that go along with it. You know, why is the ghost hanging out in the bathroom versus another room or whatnot? Sometimes it's simply because it has a water source. Another thing it has, and most homes usually have now, are extremely large mirrors. And one of the theory that has been talked about for years is that mirrors, especially when they were lined with specific substances back in the day, we're talking these mirrors that, I don't know if there was lead, there's certain substances that they were lined with, act as an absorbent for, that's why back in the day they didn't want to ever, they always covered the mirrors when people died, because they're afraid their energy was going to go into the mirror and that, you know, their Aunt Susie would always be in the mirror kind of thing. And so that's one thing you have to think about too, are these antique mirrors. I don't think they line these mirrors anymore with the same substances that they did back in the day, but I'm telling you that if you ever say, oh, there's the haunted mirror, you have to kind of ask where it came from, what kind of circumstances happened in the home, and most importantly, what is it lined with, okay? And, of course, let's see, a final theory as to why maybe ghosts like to hang out in closets. Well, they're always, for the most part, we don't hang out in our closet all day long. They're probably the most quiet place, and for them, probably the most trusted place. I do know that in our closet, in our former home, too, there was we had two attics in the house. We didn't have one attic. We actually had two. One was very small, though, but it was very comfortable, and it would be a very comfortable place for a ghost to hang out and come through into the closet, of course, when it wanted to. So dimly lit conditions such as closets, basements, attics, or even in upper corners of a room are prime locations for ghostly hangouts. Let's not forget about our outdoor sheds and barns as also prime targets. We know that all of these spaces are not usually high trafficked by people and are often not disturbed by people either. So why is it again that ghosts want to hang out in these locations? What is it about them that's so appealing? Well, again, I can't answer that, but I can go back to this castle that we stayed in a couple years ago that I videotaped in that room. Coming out of the bathroom, I don't know why, it's probably the darkest place, two motion orbs with my ultraviolet lens, by the way, in front of me, dancing, swirling, you know, flying around in front of me, and then one manifested, which means that it made itself into a mist, a small mist, and it went right through the solid door in our room, and the other orb actually followed it. But before all of this was occurring, they were hanging out in the bathroom. And I don't know, the room was always known to be haunted by some kids and possibly a nanny, also due to a fire back in the day. And it is very possible that they really felt or took comfort in the bathroom for certain reasons. However, it did terrify me when I actually saw these things on the camera dangling in front of me. It was just the weirdest thing. Well, later that night they came back and they decided to play with my husband's computer. And that bugged me. So I unplugged the computer and I told him to go away. You just don't want things dangling above you when you're trying to sleep in a room. So let's see. Let's hear another example here. Here's another example. Stories from nursing staff individuals observing their patients conversing with entities who hang out in the upper corner of a room. Of course, the nurse can't see who they're talking to, but the patient appears clear that in their mind that they're actually talking to somebody. Sometimes I would ask if, like when my father was passing away, I would ask, he'd stare at a clock all the time. And I asked him once, who are you looking at? Oh, he just says, I'm just looking at the clock. But, you know, you watch these things and you kind of watch, you know, individuals as they're passing away, especially our loved ones, and you kind of wonder, what are they looking at? Or are they simply having a hallucination of some sort? And this is usually due to a low oxygen level in their brain. And so this is very possible that they could also be hallucinating that they're seeing somebody, but it's a very common experience. My husband's father, though, when he was passing away, he didn't necessarily see individuals. And I can't recall if he ever talked about any of the family members, but I do recall he did see pocket gophers in the corner of his room, and he wanted something to get rid of them, so he had always kept asking for, you know, give me something, I want to get rid of them type thing. He had brain cancer, so I don't know. People go through all kinds of different experiences. Now let's talk a little bit about this wardrobe that was in this haunted room that I was in last year in Wales. And it was closed when we went into the room. I had asked the manager if she could tell me where how old the wardrobe was and where it came from. And a lot of the pieces that were brought into the inn in many of these rooms that they had came from somewhere. But wardrobes, in other words, closets that you put your clothes in because there's not a closet in the room, they're also a prime target hiding place for, a lot of apparitions. And it just so happens, I had a tremendously terrifying experience in that room that evening, and I did shoot a very solid orb by that wardrobe, and the wardrobe door was open the next morning when I had woke up. And I took pictures of all of this and had put it in my book. So if you're interested in some of my most interesting experiences, Hanging Around can be found on Paranormal Encounters. Dr. Kelly Schutz, Hanging Around, can be found on Amazon.com, and it might actually enlighten you a little bit as to what the possibilities are out there regarding all of this. Okay, so what else do I have here for you about ghosts who love to hang out in closets? Well, they like to hang out in basements too. I mean, I've been down. Have you ever noticed that people always ghost hunt either in an attic or a basement? Very peaceful, very dark, sometimes also very moist. Humidity. Again, ghosts do thrive on wet conditions as well. So they're also down on dirt floors. So I've had situations where I photographed motion orbs in both cases. And is it also, someone had asked me once, is it true that if a house sits for a very long period of time, especially if it's an abandoned house, that it can become haunted or more haunted? And the answer to that question is yes. Usually if something discovers a left alone abandoned house somewhere, quiet conditions, they'll either take residence in it. Doesn't necessarily mean they live there. They'll take residence in it. Or over time, depending on the types of materials used in that house, such as copper wiring or whatnot, it can actually strengthen the energy in that home. I can tell you that the 105-10-year-old, my great-grandfather's house is tremendously haunted. And it sits there. And it is abandoned, but not technically. But, there's no life that goes in and out of that house. And it needs to be torn down, but the minute we tear it down, by the way, those ghosts aren't necessarily going to go away. They'll probably go into the barn. They're going to find some place of comfort, and it is true that ghosts don't always go away just because you tear down a house. Okay, so have you ever also noticed your pet looking at something up towards the corner of a room? And you're wondering, what exactly are they looking at? Is it a bug? Is it a moth? What are they looking at? Pets are, as well as children, are probably the best apparition detector you could ever possibly ask for. They will clue you in when something's around or near them. They have a tendency to not lie. At a very young age, they have a tendency to not lie and make up stories, although it can happen. And they tell you exactly what they see. So great little detectors, though I would never want to put either of them in harm's way, because if you have a negative energy especially, they will attack either regardless of how innocent they are. And I've heard of cases where animals have been killed by an apparition, attacked by them. It's terrible. So it's not like you want to get a pet just to be a radar in your house. They can actually be put in harm's way. Let's see, what else do I have here for you? We've talked about wardrobes, we talked about closets, we talked about corners of rooms, we've talked about barns, we talked about attics, we talked about basements, we've talked about just about everything. We talked about the fact that there are types of materials that absorb energy that essentially are the battery for a lot of these apparitions. What else can I tell you? Let's talk a little bit about boxes. Wooden boxes, okay? So you always hear, I don't know, that trunk, there's things in that trunk that have been there for a long time. Okay, let's talk a little bit about that. So I'm going to bring up the example again of the television show Ghost Adventures. I like to see what they're always up to, and I like to compare my notes of what I experienced to what they're experiencing. And in this haunted museum, the one where I had captured this incredibly large mist outside of the building during daylight hours, I think he acquired this wooden box called the Dybbuk's box. And the Dybbuk's box now resides, I believe, in the museum there. But it used to be with a gentleman somewhere. I cannot remember what state he was in, but he actually buried it in his field. He buried it. And then he unburied it, and he essentially gave it to Mr. Zach Bagans. But when you open up this box and you look in it, some really awful, terrible things actually, it's almost like the person's being attacked or something, things occur, and it's very negative, and it's very, and what is it? I don't know what's hiding in there. I don't know if it's a demon. I don't know what's hiding in that box, but I do know that a lot of physical issues happen, lots of different negative experiences. So it's not like if you're, oh, I'll take the dare and look in the box. I don't know if I would push the envelope that far in looking in a box, knowing that it's tremendously negative of what comes out of it when you look in it. Okay, so that's one thing. There was another thing that he had on one of his shows called Deadly Possessions, which was a dresser that this woman had, and her mother, something to do with, there was something in the upper drawer of that dresser, and she just wanted to get rid of the dresser because whatever it was in there was causing a lot of physical ailments. But in this case, maybe a coincidence, but her mother had died of a heart attack regarding something when she opened up the top level of that dresser drawer. I can't remember the details exactly, but there seems to be a connection here with wood and the oils that come from individuals' hands that might be absorbed into the wood. And that's something that hasn't probably been researched enough, but is something that is now being also talked about how does energy get from one object to another or stay on an object. We talk about dolls, we talk about haunted this, we talk about haunted that. Well, it's something to do with potentially the energies or the oils from our hands that can potentially cause something to become or what we think is haunted. That's haunted objects, though, and I think I had a show on that a few back here. So you might want to listen to that show. I think it's really interesting how when I go to an antique or store or an auction now, I take a second look at everything that I buy. And usually you have to wash it in sea salt just to try to remove any of the energies that could be on it. Then that's anything, by the way. However, when you think about this Dybbuk box, you think about this dresser drawer, and you think about the wardrobe, and you think about closets, and you think about all these spaces that have the tendency to house an apparition, you begin to wonder, is any place safe in your home anymore? Is anything safe around you anymore? And the final thing I'm going to talk about is actually people's clothing. Now, I know we started out saying, why do they hide in closets? But this brings us all the way to also a person that dies of a tragic death can actually charge the clothing that they're wearing to become haunted. So a lot of people, sometimes they'll hang on to people's clothes because it reminds them of their child or their family member or their friend, but some objects, believe it or not, do have a tendency to be charged with the energy of an individual upon their death, depending on how tragic it was and is. So just another thing outside of a closet that could be potentially charged. So here we have closets and wardrobes and trunks, oh my, okay. And they're very good repositories, not only for our memories, but also places where apparitions can go to hide out. Let me talk a little bit about one more thing, and then I think we're going to wrap this up today. And let me see. Oh, yeah. Okay. So my husband and I stayed at a bed and breakfast, several years ago. And the woman had claimed that she had a ghost in her place. That's why we were attracted to the place to begin with, or at least I was. My husband's just a good sport and comes along for the ride, basically. I use him as my ghost bait. He actually is really good ghost bait. Anyway, we were in this place and she had a sign on this door that led up to the attic. And she said, please do not go up here. The ghost does not like to be disturbed. Now, if that's not an invitation for someone to sneak up into the attic, I do not know what is. However, she wasn't kidding. The ghost, female, liked to hang out at night, though, in the room that we stayed in. I did capture an orb, a good orb, not just a orb. It wasn't dust or an insect or anything like that, or a flash bounce. I did capture an orb hanging around my husband a few times in that room that night, and he did smell perfume. You know, that rose petal, old-fashioned Victorian perfume. Apparently, she liked to wear that. But what she liked she liked men. And she liked my husband, but she hated me. And so she tucked him in, believe it or not, by tucking the covers down on him the night that we went. Obviously, we were there and we went to sleep. But of course, for me, she didn't like me very well. So she attacked me, tried to take possession of my body, made me physically ill, and of course, drew on my face during the evening time. Now, granted, I can honestly tell you that's not something that I would have imagined a jealous ghost doing, but ghosts can do just about anything if they put their minds to it. So her place, though, that she liked to hang out during the daytime was in the attic, but at nighttime she liked to hang out in this room. So, what could be lurking in your closet, or attic, or basement, or barn, or corner of a room? What could be charging your objects, your boxes, your clothing, anything that you could possibly think of? Most importantly, what is it about these conditions and objects and places that your visitor might want to stay? Think about that until we get to the Ghosts of Las Vegas next time. Here ends the segment for this podcast today. Let's take a break. When we return, we will move into segment 2, otherwise known as Beyond the Grave. In this segment, a voice talent will share a story about an elderly grandmother who continued to dress herself even after she had passed away. Stay tuned.
Several years ago, my grandmother made the conscious decision to succumb to her cancer. She had been in and out of hospital a number of times, receiving treatments for an illness that ultimately took her life. She decided she didn't want to live anymore and gave up. She passed away in December, just before Christmas. Although my grandmother had a difficult life, she always made one thing quite clear to all of us. She wanted to look good. This seemed important to her. She had lived with an abusive husband who didn't do much for her, had children that gave up on their own lives, having their stories air out in the local newspaper each week, and missing out on dreams that could have helped her see a different side to living. Why is it that good people seem to lose out on remarkable chances? Why didn't she get a chance to experience a more meaningful life? My aunt, Gloria, decided to go and visit my grandmother in her final days. She went to the hospital to stay with her as she was passing away. It was at the point of her passing that something odd occurred. With no heartbeat, eyes closed, and lying rather still, a few minutes after she had been clinically dead, her hands started to move. Her hands made their way to an unbuttoned button on her shirt, with her mission to button it. Science has proven that the mind can remain alive for 6 to 8 minutes after the heart stops beating. My grandmother seemed concerned about her appearance, even in death. Perhaps she was looking from above and decided that this unbuttoned button would simply not do as she rose to heaven.
Let's take a break. When we return, we will move into segment 3 of the podcast known as Ghosts in the News. This segment will be reported by a voice talent who will share with us an interesting ghost sighting witnessed by everyday people around the globe. Stay tuned.
Welcome, everyone, to segment 3 called Ghosts in the News.
What ghostly ghouls are lurking in your area?
In a news article, as reported by Mirror News, dated March 2017, takes us to an undisclosed location in England where a mum claimed to be picked on and attacked by a phantom apparition. The article, entitled Terrified Young Mum Attacked by Ghost Claw, reveals first footage of home possessed by evil spirits, is just one of the many incidents where she tried to exorcise evil spirits from her home, but they continued to return, taunting her in the form of a child, man, or animal. The activity had become so turbulent, she requested to be moved to another flat with a denial by the housing council. The activity has involved the ghostly entity peeping through her windows, toy cars making noises without being switched on, plugs pushing themselves in and out of walls, coffee jars rearranged on her counter and vegetable oil sprayed on her cooker. The mum says her young son screams from morning to night, and as soon as they leave the home, he is a different child. And that is our ghostly moment in the news.
Let's take a break. When we return, we will move into segment 4 entitled Maynard and Mildred. Stay tuned.
Hello, Maynard. What's the matter? Haven't seen a ghost today? Maynard, science can't explain everything. Maynard, just because you can't see me doesn't mean I'm not here.
Yeah.
I just love a breezy day so I can fly my kite. I want to see how high I can get my Power Dragon kite up into those fluffy white clouds.
Hello, Maynard.
Holy crap, Mildred, what are you doing here? I'm trying to see how high I can fly my Power Dragon kite. It's really cool. It has flames coming out of its nose.
Flames coming out of its nose? Really? Maynard, if the wind picks up, your kite's going to be dragging you. How high do you think it's going to go?
I have 100 feet of string. And if the wind picks up, I need to hold on really tight.
Maynard, what is that coming out of your kite's nose?
Mildred, I need to focus. Give me a minute to raise this kite into the air. Wow!
Wow, look at the clouds in the sky, Maynard. They look really dark. Are you sure you want to be flying your kite so high?
Mildred, don't take all the fun out of it. The conditions are just fine. In order for me to get this kite high in the air, I need some breeze.
Breeze? Maynard, let me put this key on your string so we can rediscover electricity.
Mildred, here I go! Oh, wow! Higher, higher, higher! Oh, my kite is pulling me! Look, I'm running!
Maynard, I think the weather conditions are picking up. You better pull your kite in.
Nonsense! The breeze is perfect, and it's picking up. But I can't stop running.
Running? Maynard, there are ice cubes falling from the sky on top of you. It looks like your kite is breaking up.
Oh, oh, oh. I need to pull the kite in, but I can't.
Here, Maynard, let me help you.
It was a bright, sunny day until you showed up, Mildred.
Cool. Maynard, your dragon is on fire. Woohoo! What a cool effect coming out of its nose. Woo!
No, Mildred, that's real fire. Stand back while I pull the kite down.
Wow! A spark just flew out of that key. Shocking.
Literally. Help me, Mildred. Wait, what am I saying? Mildred, quick, grab the string and help bring the kite down. Ah, I have ice cubes falling on top of me. Ouch, ouch, ouch.
Just like in The Wizard of Oz, it's pulling you off the ground. Hang on, Maynard!
I'm flying away. Mildred, help get me down.
Let me think about that for a moment. Whew, Maynard, I think I'm going to take off. As your kite burns up, I think you'll be coming down. Next time, I think we should leave the key off of it. I think one creator of electricity is just enough. I hope the ice cubes don't knock you out. By the way, cool effect on the dragon's fire coming out of its nose.
That's not fire coming out of its nose!
Maybe next time we can go on a bike ride. Okay, Maynard?
Let's take our final break. When we come back, we will hear segment 5 entitled
Life Beyond Death,
as narrated by a voice talent who will take us to an alleged haunted location to explore the mysteries of one or more energies that are still
hanging around.
Stay tuned. Just when you think you are safe from the world around you, you suddenly realize that no matter where you go,
You are not alone. Welcome to
Life Beyond Death.
A true story. I had no idea our moving into a haunted house would bring trouble to our children. I mean, who would pick on a little child anyways? I guess I didn't think this one through very well. Back in the early 1980s, my family moved into a small Victorian house that appeared rather harmless. I mean, it was quaint. I had heard from a few in the neighborhood that we were making a big mistake. I told everyone that we were not afraid of things that went bump in the night. Boy, was I wrong. Being somewhat paranoid, I started to notice unusual occurrences. Probably a month or so living there. At first, I ignored all the cues giving me a sign that something wanted us out of the house. Things would go missing and reappear in other rooms. I felt this was harmless, but a little playful. I would hear footsteps shuffling down the hallway late at night. Just my imagination. And my children? Well, who would wake up during the middle of the night crying and asking to stay in our room? I've just told them a million times you have an overactive imagination. We were not in any position to move from our house to another. My husband thought I needed to lay off the coffee. About 5 to 6 months living there, I began waking up choking. My husband told me I had sleep paralysis. I found my jewelry in my husband's underwear drawer. I told him if he wanted to wear my jewelry so badly, that maybe he should just ask. Light bulbs would explode without warning. Seemed like we could never keep a light bulb lit anyways. But the moment of truth finally came when I put our baby girl down in her crib, which resided upstairs in one of the more quieter rooms. And as I was downstairs walking from one room to another and looked up toward the stairs, I saw her one day lying at the top step as if a single push would roll her right down. My having an issue with this menacing presence was one thing, but picking on an innocent child was another. It was at the point that I knew no one was safe in the house. How the baby got from the crib to the top of the stairs still baffles me to this day. The final straw was when my children were old enough to play on the stairs. One day I saw my two youngest sitting at the top of the stairs, sitting on a cardboard-made sled. They looked like they wanted to slide down the stairs with it, you know, kids. I told them to not entertain the idea. Then suddenly, and without warning, my youngest was pushed from behind and she fell all the way down the stairs, breaking her leg. My kids tried blaming themselves for the mishap, but a few years later told me that something had actually pushed them. It was at this point that I knew instinctively that we needed to get out of that house. We packed up and we left. To this date, nobody has or will purchase that house. What earthbound experience might you encounter before you realize that maybe
life
Thank you for joining us this evening. Dr. Schutz welcomes your emails and paranormal stories. Visit her website at www.paranormaluniversalpress.com for contact information, or go to amazon.com to view her books, searching under Paranormal Encounters. Subscribe to this program by clicking on the link on her podcast page to follow upcoming episodes. Thanks for listening. Take care. And until next time,
be careful what you wish for.
The script, vocal talents, and music compositions in this podcast program are copyrighted. As a disclaimer, this podcast episode or parts thereof may not be reproduced, reposted, or transmitted in any form without the express permission from the producer and company, Paranormal Universal Press, LLC. Any opinion or claim made in any podcast episode by the host or guest does not necessarily represent the viewpoints of Paranormal Universal Press, LLC. Properties mentioned in any podcast are publicly known to be haunted or have been discovered to have unexplained occurrences. If you are a ghost seeker, please take precautions and respect people's properties by not trespassing.